words of chant. 325-25. Glories of devotional service. This is Lord Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Satam prasangam mama virya samvidho.
Satam prasangam mama virya samvidho.
Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha.
Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha.
Tajjoshanat ashvapavarga vartmani.
Tajjoshanat ashvapavarga vartmani.
Sarvaraktir bhaktir anukramishyati.
Sarvaraktir bhaktir anukramishyati.
Sattam prasangan mama virya samvidho.
Sattam prasangan mama virya samvidho.
Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha.
Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha.
Tajjoshanat ashvapa varga vartmani.
Tajjoshanat ashvapa varga vartmani.
Sattaratir bhaktir anukramishyati.
Sattaratir bhaktir anukramishyati.
Satam prasangan
mama virya samvidho.
Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha.
Tajjoshanat ashvapa varga vartmani. Shraddharatir bhakti anukramishyati.
Satam
prasangan mama virya samvidho. Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha. Tajjoshanat ashvapa varga vartmani.
Any ladies?
Satam prasangam mama virya samvidho. Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kataha. Tajjoshanat ashvapa varga vartmani. Shraddharatir bhaktir anukramishyati.
Satam.
Satam.
Of pure devotees.
Of pure devotees.
Prasangat.
Prasangat.
Through the association.
Through the association.
Mama.
Mama.
My.
My.
Virya.
Virya.
Wonderful activities.
Wonderful activities.
Samvidaha.
Samvidaha.
By discussion of.
By discussion of.
Bhavanti.
Bhavanti.
Become.
Become.
Hrit.
Hrit.
To the heart.
To the heart.
Karna.
Karna.
To the ear.
To the ear.
Rasa ayana.
Rasa ayana.
Pleasing.
Pleasing.
Katha.
Katha.
The stories.
The stories.
Tat.
Tat.
Of that.
Of that.
Joshanat.
Joshanat.
By cultivation.
By cultivation.
Ashu.
Ashu.
Quickly.
Quickly.
Appavarga.
Appavarga.
Of liberation.
Of liberation.
Vartmani.
Vartmani.
On the path.
On the path.
Shraddha.
Shraddha.
Firm faith.
conflict.
Ratihi.
Ratihi.
Attraction.
Attraction.
Bhaktihi.
Bhaktihi.
Devotion.
Devotion.
Anukramishyati.
Anukramishyati.
Will follow in order.
Will follow in order.
Translation, in the Association of Pure Devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and to the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of advancing in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious and who are engaged in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. Simply by theoretical knowledge or study, one cannot make any appreciable advancement. Repeating himself. One must give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of devotees. Because without the association of devotees, one cannot understand the activities of the Lord. Generally, people are convinced of the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. Because they do not associate with devotees, they cannot understand that the Absolute Truth can be a person and have personal activities. This is a very difficult subject matter. And unless one has personal understanding of the Absolute Truth, there is no meaning to devotion. Service or devotion cannot be offered to anything impersonal. Service must be offered to a person. Non-devotees cannot appreciate Krishna consciousness by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature wherein the activities of the Lord are described. They think that these activities are fictional, manufactured stories, because spiritual life, it is not explained to them in the proper mode. To understand the personal activities of the Lord, one has to seek the association of devotees. That's for the fourth time, in case you didn't notice. And by such association, when one contemplates and tries to understand the transcendental activities of the Lord, the path to liberation is open and he is freed. When one has firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes fixed in his attraction for association with the Lord and the devotees increases. Association with devotees means association with the Lord. The devotee who makes this association develops the consciousness for rendering service to the Lord, and then, being situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, he gradually becomes perfect. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshana Miritam Jena Tasmai Sri Kuruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Nina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadam Titam. So this is from the research that I did. One of four verses that Prabhupada would often quote when discussing anartha nivritti. One of them we went over yesterday. Srinvata Sokata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyan Taksto Yabhadrani Vidhunoti Saritsita. That's one. Then another is from Bhagavad Gita. Yesham Pantakatam Papam. Somebody knows the rest? Jananam Punya Karmanam Te Dvanta Mohanir Mukto Vajante Mam Dridhavrataha. With great determination, we spoke about determination. The determination to traverse the path of bhakti and reach the goal. Dridhavrata. So that's very similar, not identical, but it's similar to the stage that follows anarjana vritti. That stage that follows anarjana vritti is nishtha, where faith is firm. In the beginning, it's pliable. Adau shraddha. In the beginning, there's some faith. There's something more than this. I'm sure of it. I have that faith. What it is, I'm not sure. But that it exists, I'm sure. Little faith. And nishtha is where not only one's practices are firm, but like the discussion last night, the abhadras or the anarthas, they're practically destroyed. So, using Prabhupada's percentages, 40% left, maybe. Maybe 25%. Even 40%. Mostly gone. He gave those percentages. So, but where one's devotional practice is so strong, even that residual balance of anarthas, they are dissipated by the quickly by the strength of bhakti. So yesham twantakatam papam, sins, the reactions to one's previous sins are basically eradicated. Jananam punya karmanam. And one is in this life engaged exclusively in activities that are scripturally directed. Pious activities, proper religious conduct, theistic conduct, guided and controlled, voluntarily controlled by theistic conduct. So in that condition, then one can take up devotional service in a very, very fixed mood of determination to reach the goal. So that's another verse. That verse in particular, or this one in particular, complements that one. This is our topic this morning, is how association can enable us or empower us to successfully complete this anarjana vritti process. So something is needed on our own. We have to make some effort. How much effort can any one of us muster? A little effort, because we're little, very tiny. We require some other assistance. We require it. We require Krishna's assistance that comes in the form of a good association, devotee association, as the purport of this verse is speaking. So there's two so far. Srinvatasvakata Krishna, that verse from yesterday morning. Yesham Tundakatam Papam, that's another one.
Then, anybody want to guess another one? What's a verse? What's the Shikshastakam verse that speaks about this process of eradication of unwanted things from the heart? Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. Right at the very beginning. Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. Cleansing the heart. Just the process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra has that effect. Cleansing the heart. And this one, these four verses. There are other verses that he refers to, but repeatedly, regularly, these are the four that he indicates. So, in the purport of this verse, directly, Prabhupada instructs that one should seek out association. Don't wait for it to come descending from the sky and land in front of you. Devotee association. Krishna sent a devotee. Don't wait for that. It might happen. Don't wait for that to happen. The instruction is seek out the association. So if you, one who is engaged in devotional practices, bhajana kriya, in order to progress further in the path towards the goal, to get that determination, I want to reach the goal. When I leave this body, I want to go to Krishna. I don't want to go to another material body. No, thank you. I want to go to Krishna. I really want to reach that goal. I want my loving attraction for Krishna to awaken. Don't wait for it to happen. Some people come flying out of the sky. No. You go further, continue with the devotional practices and seek this satam prasangam mama virya sambhito. See the light going on. Satam prasangam mama virya sambhito. When we're in the association of devotees who are similarly sincere on the path back to Godhead, what do we do together? Mama virya sambhito. We discuss topics about Krishna. Bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha. Because we like to enjoy, in that way, we like to enjoy hrit karna, in the heart, and enjoyable, pleasing to the ear, the nice topics about Krishna, nice songs about Krishna, nice glorifications of Krishna. Very, very satisfying. And why is that satisfaction there? Because the heart is being cleansed. I want to read something where Prabhupada is lecturing in Vrindavan, October 1972. He discusses this very point. Bhajana Kriya, the beginning, is chanting Hare Krishna mantra. This is Bhajana Kriya. And if it is done properly, then anartana vritti syat. Then he becomes free from all unwanted things. Don't we wish? Anarta, there is no need. Just like intoxication, there is no need. But if the bhajana kriya, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra chanting goes on, naturally it will be stopped. And he explains that very interesting word, naturally. And the kids are giving their commentary too. Is Sanjaya here? You worked yesterday. You can just go invite them.
naturally you will be stopped. Then nishta, tato nishta, tato ruchi. In this way we can make advancement. He goes back. The beginning is Shrinvata Svakata Krishna. As soon as Krishna sees. So here's the naturally part. The naturally part of how anarthas are removed is the mystery of bhakti. Krishna sees what we're doing, trying, sometimes crying, but he's trying to bring our attention to Krishna in the right form, by the right procedure. So as soon as Krishna sees Atmavat Sarva Bhutanam, little attempt is there. Immediately he helps. Gudiyogam Dadami Tam Yenamam Upayanti Te. Krishna helps. He says, yes, you come here, sit down. You do this. In this way, Yenamam Upayanti Te. Krishna helps the direction so he can achieve the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Vidyantaksto Yabhadrani. We have got so many dirty things within our hearts, and as soon as we are a little inclined to hear about Krishna, he removes the dirty things. Then we become more and more enthused. There's the Bhavanti Rit Karana from this verse. We become more and more enthused. In this little section I just read, Prabhupada is explaining, giving a very practical example and explanation of how Krishna gives intelligence. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives intelligence how we can come to him. In what way does he do that? From within, he reminds us, as he's reminding us in Bhagavad Gita, you come, sit down, fix your mind on these activities of hearing and chanting. Don't go running around and just engage. Here's the Krishna Katha. Here's the devotee with whom you can engage in Krishna Katha. Go for it. That's intelligence. That's the intelligence Krishna gives. He strengthens. We know these things. How many times have you heard these things? So many times. But we still find some ability of our intention to go somewhere else and our activities to do something else. But Krishna gives us the determination, the strong intelligence that controls the mind, controls the senses, controls our activities, and cleanses the heart. That's Krishna, that's the Krishna factor. He sees, he reciprocates. So, as Prabhupada says in the purport here, association with devotees, you take it either way, association with devotees means we get the association of Krishna. And conversely, the association of Krishna, we want the association of Krishna. He gives us the association of his devotees. So we may say, we like Krishna, but sometimes the devotees, I don't know. I mean, some devotees, yeah, but some devotees, I don't know. So the art of association with devotees brings us to the association of Krishna. So, since the topic is association, I wanted to say specifically or present how Sangha nurtures or helps to develop the process of anartha vritti. So there is some opportunity to directly associate with Krishna. It's through the mercy of devotees we get that association, but just as this little passage I read what Prabhupada is saying, just chanting Krishna's name. He so kindly gives his association to us freely. It's another Shikshastakam verse. He makes his access to him readily available through his holy name. Or through the descriptions about him, like we find as those of you who were here for Acharya's class yesterday, how you found from reading Krishna book together. By reading Krishna book together, by hearing Krishna's pastimes together, and discussing those pastimes together, Krishna is making himself available. I'll just make a little mention of something that could be built into, has been built into a whole month-long seminar, which I'll just mention. But in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, get which book, he identifies that Krishna's pastimes of killing the demons corresponds with Krishna's helping the devotee to overcome specific obstacles on the path of devotion. So I have a handout which I won't give out now because everyone will lose, I'll lose everybody for the rest of the class while you're reading it. But I'll give it out at the end. Give you a take-home copy. And it covers, oh, it's from Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So it covers 21 situations from Krishna book or from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, where Krishna's dealing with the demons, or in some cases it's not just demons, it's some impurity in the heart of his devotee, like Brahma stealing the calves of the cowherd boys, for example. Some impurity may arise. So then Krishna helps the sincere devotee overcome that. I'll read the first two just so you get some idea what this is about. Who's the first demon Krishna killed? Putana. How old was Krishna when he killed Putana? Younger than those children. He wasn't able to run yet and scream. He could scream, but couldn't run and scream. Okay. So, sounds like one's hitting the other one or something. So how old was Krishna when he killed Putana? There are two different accounts. One account is he was just 3 days old. Another account was he was 3 months old. But very, very young. Very young. And then Shakatasura was the next one, the cart demon. So Putana, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, represents the pseudo-guru. So Krishna protects his sincere devotee from that. And Shakatasura, we know this, the cart demon. The little baby Krishna was put under the cart and he kicked his legs and the cart just exploded, flew all over the place. It didn't just like fall to the ground, it just powerful legs. So according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this pastime of Krishna killing the Shakata demon, it signifies the anartha, let's read, carrying the burden of the cart load of old and new bad habits. The cart load. We have a cart load of old habits and some new bad habits too. So lethargy and vanity. And Trinavarta, Trinavarta, whirlwind demon. So Trinavarta, when Krishna killed Trinavarta, it represents his destroying the false pride arising from material scholarship, which gives rise to bogus philosophies. And 21 of them. So, for the most part, Prabhupada indicated that when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, and certainly when we hear Krishna's pastimes, we are not to take them as metaphorical, other than there's one section in the Bhagavatam that's very clearly metaphorical, and that's when Narada instructs King Pachin Varishat and tells a whole story, an allegorical story about a king, Paranjana, who is actually King Pachin Varishat. So that's allegorical. So it's not that we should understand that these demon encounters, Krishna and Putana, never really happened. It's just a metaphorical thing. It really happened. But it's Krishna's protecting this part that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting. It's Krishna's helping the devotee who is sincere, Satam, sincere, truthful. He's helping that devotee become free from the obstacle on the path of devotion represented by a pseudo-guru or a load-bearing burden of old bad habits. Krishna helps. Or this Trinavarta. So I want to tell those. About a week ago, I was with Suresh and some other devotees at a house program. We're introducing a system to a group of families, of the Bhakti Vriksha system, and it was, rather than lecture format, it's a discussion format. So one of the problems with a discussion format is it invites all kinds of speculation and gobbledygook and all kinds of things. So one has to be very patient through that, and a little bit expert, and a few other things too. So there was one person who was doing his very best to monopolize the discussion. It wasn't discussion. If somebody said something, he wanted to say three somethings. One of those kind of people. And the somethings that he wanted to say were wildly speculative, but they sounded intellectual. One of those kind of people. So as we were going along, I was thinking about this Krishna's killing Trinavarta. The false pride arising from material scholarship, which gives rise to bogus philosophies. I was thinking, Krishna, not the person, but this anartha, please remove this anartha. Not to kill the person, just the anartha. And somehow, I mean, I don't, not that something necessarily mystical happened, but towards the very end, you didn't hear the conversation, but at the very end, he came over and said, you know, we're talking about the cyclic succession, and his issue was, is it not possible to realize Krishna, to know Krishna, without the cyclic succession? Even the whole present, we just quote after quote after quote, but he had his, well, maybe these ideas were there before there was written language, and since you couldn't go and read the book, you had to go and hear from the person, and that's why you had to have, you know, a living guru, but now we have the written language, so we can just go to the book and be sincere, but he kept saying the same thing in different ways, you know, giving example this and that and the other thing. And you know, even the people in the audience, they were ready to get at the hook and draw him off stage. But they were saying some things like, anyway, at the very end, he got it. I didn't tell you that, but at the very end, he got it. He said, so what you were trying to say was, so now I understand and I, I don't know if you said I accept, but something close to that. Now I understand what you were trying to present, and I thought Krishna did it. So sometimes when we're presenting Krishna consciousness to other people, if we're just praying to Krishna to be his instrument, rather than getting the sledgehammer of the philosophy out and raise it up in the air and threaten to hammer the other person if he doesn't surrender, but just in a very exemplary Vaishnava way, present the understanding and conclusions. And let Krishna, not assist us, but let Krishna do Krishna's work through us somehow and in the heart of the individual. Because after all, what we want is a transformation of heart, not just someone to be, they're pinned to the ground and say, I surrender, uncle. But they actually accept from their heart. So by meditating, these pastimes of Krishna are very, very wonderful for the process of anartanivritti. But according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're performed for that purpose, and they're given to us to recite, to remember. It certainly was very nice. I will definitely say it was very nice to think of Krishna and Krishna's killing Trinivarta demon, rather than some of the other thoughts that might have been in my mind when this person was doing this thing. It just immediately thought of Krishna. And it felt protected. It felt, surely Krishna is the supreme controller, and Krishna has brought this person here to become purified. So it was very nice. It purifies the heart. So hearing Krishna Katha directly removes anartas from our own heart and from others who are similarly engaged in that process. Therefore, setting the stage where we create opportunities that our Krishna consciousness society is for that purpose, to bring people together and hear about Krishna, worship the beautiful deity form of Radha Damodar and the various deities that Prabhupada has given us all around the world. To help us become a little further advanced in this process of anartanivritti. So through just reviewing again. So through association, we should seek out that kind of association where there are persons who are very sincere in applying themselves to this process, because through that we will get the kind of Krishna Katha that will help us become to overcome our impurities. And we can also take the direct assistance by confiding, guyam akyati prishtati, confiding in others of what are the struggles that we're undergoing to become free from anartas, and they can give their help and support to become successful. When Krishna sees that, Krishna helps us, gives us that association, gives us that process, helps us by cleansing our heart further and further. These direct ways of hearing about Krishna also is there for the anartanivritti. Just two last things. We mentioned yesterday the importance of, for a devotee who is sincere, to carefully guard against unwholesome association. Association of those who oppose the principles of bhakti or who disregard the principles of bhakti. We should carefully guard against that unwholesome association. And throughout the whole process, everything is sustained in an ongoing way by our practices of devotion. So we start with Vaidhi Bhakti, Bhajana Kriya, devotional practices, and that with doing those with faith in the heart, and faith in the heart carried into the practice itself, this will sustain the whole effort of Anartha Nivritti. And I just wanted to conclude by reading maybe like five different passages from a book written by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 100 Warnings Against Mundane Mellows, Prakrita Rasa Shatadhushani. So it, for those of you that have the folio from the Bhaktivedanta archives, it's right there. It's in the supplemental section of the archives. So that's where I'm reading from. I'm just going to read some passages. So there's one section that's, while anarthas are still in the heart, so for most of us there's still some remaining anarthas in the heart, and so these cautions apply to us. While still contaminated with anarthas, the bad habits, while still contaminated with anarthas, bad habits, and philosophical misconceptions that impede devotion, one should never become charmed by mundane forms. As long as these impediments remain, one should never mix our devotional service with the impurity of mundane qualities. He doesn't give a commentary, but mundane qualities, the modes of nature, we should be on guard against letting the execution of our devotional service be mixed with fruitive intention, just like we discussed yesterday, the contamination of fruitive, urge. Somehow I have to gain or win or conquer or something, or ignorance. While still contaminated with anarthas, one should never try to enjoy materialistic pastimes. As long as these impediments remain, one should never give up trying to purely chant the holy name of Krishna. Nice instruction. Here's another one. The disciple is never said to have developed deep devotional attachment, or rati, as long as anarthas are not removed. The disciple who is still contaminated with these impediments is never taught the science of intimate devotional mellows, rasa tattva. So this has, this verse by Bhaktisiddhanta has its bearing with some of our modern situations we're dealing with in our society. There's three more. Anartha Nivritti is a prerequisite for becoming established in our relationship with Krishna. If we want to reach the goal, this is something we have to do. We won't get a free ticket or upgrade ticket. We have to go through this process of Anartha Nivritti to reestablish our relation with Krishna. In the absence of the necessary constituent elements of the bhakti process, such as anartha nivritti, one can never become fixed up in one's eternal sthayi bhav, and in the absence of sthayi bhav, its necessary elements, one can never become situated in their eternal rasa. We want to reach the goal, we have to do our work in this stage. If one's consciousness is blocked by material conceptions, then Krishna's pure transcendental form can never be realized by chanting the holy name. If one's consciousness is blocked by material conceptions, then Krishna's pure transcendental qualities can never be realized by chanting the holy name. Due to the blockage of offenses, aparad, one can never attain the flow of pure devotional mellows. Due to the blockage of offenses, one can never experience the pure holy name. One who is covered by offenses may sing the pastimes of the Lord, but this will never do away with the lust that is burning in his heart. If one does not hear the proper details of devotional science from the cyclic succession, then genuine service to the Lord can never be performed. One absorbed in the various material ingredients of the bodily concept of life will never be able to hear the Lord's transcendental pastimes. Here's to end with that nice instructions by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In the right way, and associating with one another in the right way. These will all help us become successful in our spiritual life. See if there's any comments or discussion.
And the question is not related to the topic, but it has to do with Krishna's teaching, Krishna's philosophy, and the other philosophy.
Okay, fine. Sanjay?
Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada writes about association with the devotees, does he mean that this for us in the West, this association should be limited to the devotees within ISKCON, or association with other, let's say, either sampradayas, or association with, let's say, disciples who did not become part of ISKCON after Srila Prabhupada's departure? How should we relate to this situation? Because are they devotees?
They are devotees?
Yeah, they are devotees. So how is the association with them? Let's say if I meet on the street group of devotees.
Okay, well, meeting on the street, you know, there's different kinds of association.
Yeah, or I meet somebody in my life, or person who...
The question is simple, but according to my understanding, there are many things to consider, so it's not the answer is complex. A lot depends upon, for starters, depends upon the level of advancement of the individual devotee, you know, yourself, or the devotee, the ISKCON devotee we're speaking about. Another also depends upon the level of advancement of the other individual, specifically the degree of presence or absence of envy and jealousy and those kinds of anarthas. If that's there, that's a problem. That's a red flag. If that's not there, not so much a problem. And we'll take a scriptural example. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regularly, when he traveled in South India, associated with all types of other persons from other sampradayas, other Vaishnavas, and there was no problem. In the case where there was something of a problem, he gave association, but in a different way, depending upon the quality of the individual with whom he was associated. So, taking that in a very general, as a very broad and general principle, we can also. Now, one of the things that Srila Prabhupada recommended, particularly for his disciples, was reading his own books. So someone who is very, very well versed in Prabhupada's books can read other books or hear other Vaishnava ideologies, or other Gaudiya Vaishnava ideologies or other ideologies, and it won't get confused and baffled and bewildered. But conversely, one who is not might. So a person who is a follower in ISKCON or member of ISKCON, just as a fundamental thing, just discussing this with one devotee yesterday, Srila Prabhupada is the primary Shiksha Guru for all members of ISKCON, not just for his initiated disciples, for all members of ISKCON. Primary Shiksha, so I have to know what that instruction is. So by reading his books and so many other forms of receiving, once that primary instruction is understood, everything else is the emperor, that's supreme. Everything else is understood in relation to that. So we can appreciate that there are, let's say, within other Vaishnava sampradayas than the Brahma sampradaya, there are other Vaishnava teachings. There's some, you know, the essential things are fundamentally the same, and there are some differences, and we can appreciate those differences. For example, once those preliminary things that I mentioned are, you know, you've assessed, that can tell you, or any one of us, how we should respect another Vaishnava. Fundamentally, respect must be there. Fundamentally, respect must be there towards any living entity, and certainly towards the Vaishnava. But we may respect in a different way, or with different degree of closeness or distance, depending upon some of those other factors. Yes.
In our association with the Lord, should we be conscious to guard against having a need of sensory education, like trying to be on board with this time, as opposed to having a lot of service, or
I think I understood your question, but I'm not sure I understood your question. You're asking, is it better to be in a mood of service than in a mood of enjoying devotional service? Is that what you're saying? Not exactly.
Caution against when you're in association, but you're more so for your own gratification versus external or serving.
Okay.
Kind of selfish.
Yeah.
Versus
that's a fruitive. This is an example of fruitive intention or fruitive mentality carried into the realm of devotional service. What's really important is I want. And because this satisfies my I wants, I like it. I'm very enthusiastic because it satisfies me. It's not so much, you know, the mood of service may happen to be something that's sweeter still. But I really don't, I don't know that yet. I just know I'm feeling very enthusiastic because the things that are meaningful to me, they're being fulfilled. So it's a lesser stage. Or it's something that in the anarjana vritti process one should be tuned into, because it will block one's further progress in achieving love for Krishna. At some point it's got to go. Okay, that's...
appreciating how you were praying to Krishna that the proper demons would be removed. And I thought it was so nice because that really helped me to see how that mentality benefited, like, yourself and also the other person.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, otherwise, like, there's so many other things that go through your mind in different associations, you know, that aren't healthy for yourself even. And I was thinking how within our family of devotees, relating with each other, that inspired me to think how when you say like take association or give association, that we're covered still conditioned souls with trying to practice Krishna consciousness. So either in our relationship with each other, we can either be sitting with someone thinking, oh, this person is so envious and boy, I like this guy, and nuts about them. Or we can think, boy, now this person really, you know, plays a great persona, really inspires me, maybe we're having a lot of art theater when you play, it's really great. In the same way, because both things may exist simultaneously as they do in all of us, because of the conditioning and our physical presence. But we can take that choice like you did. You make the choice of setting your mind to where Krishna is situated in that person's heart and appreciating that sign of that individual. You know, that somehow Krishna sent them to get purified.
The appreciation that I had of the individual, the part I didn't appreciate was his pride. He was very clearly proud of his erudition. He was very clearly wanting to push himself forward and the others back, and it was all of those games that wasn't enjoyable. But he had his philosophical inclination. So, but my first thought, my first thought was, he'll be purified just by contacting this philosophy. So I just will be patient. Normally in a situation like that, just be patient. With faith, this sublime message will overcome whatever the silly things that he's attached to. It was pretty clear that everybody in the room, except him, understood how silly it was. But he was being so smart about it. But that's okay. The thing that just kicked in, additional thing, was remembering this Trinavarta part. Thinking, Krishna can remove that. Like that. He can, that Anartha can be quick. So, do it quickly. I mean, not for my sake, for the man's sake. If the frame of reference, just so as to add some detail to the circumstance, but if the frame of reference is, if we're approaching the social interactions that we have with a compassion and Krishna conscious disposition, we can be very helpful in one another's association in the Nartha Nivritti process, encouraging bhakti and eradicating the unwanted things. We can be far more effective for Krishna conscious ourselves. There's some arms going up in the air making garlands, and I can't figure out which is a question and which is an garland. A garland hand.
You said yesterday that the soul and the mind were somewhat connected?
No. Oh, the heart.
The heart.
Heart and mind.
So when the anarchists and the heart are moved by Krishna, will the mind immediately be relieved?
Yeah. Yes,
I was wondering, there was something you read from the excerpts at the end.
Bhaktisiddhanta's?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it was the third one. I was wondering if you could just reread it. There's a question I have. I just want to focus for
okay.
People understanding the question better.
Here's the third one. The disciple is never said to have developed deep devotional attachment, rati, as long as impediments or anarthas are not removed. The disciple who is still contaminated with these impediments is never taught the science of intimate devotional mellows, rasa tattva.
Maybe it was the second one.
Maybe
something
about
it seemed like mundane or...
While still contaminated with anarthas, one should never try to enjoy material pastimes.
Okay. Yes, that's
it. Further question?
Well, I was just thinking, like say in the... what came to my mind is thinking, you know, like... myself in particular, but just thinking of like, you know, having families and children in America in particular, there's like material pastimes.
Material pastimes,
you know, family pastimes. And so, of course, being American, and not growing up in a devotee family. I mean, I grew up with all kinds of material pastimes with family.
We won't get into it.
But anyway, particularly as we're raising children, we're in America and the energy is very strong here. You know, the influence is everywhere. You don't have to go very far to get it by a billboard or this or that. But even things like whether it's, and I know you can like Christianize things and dovetail it, etc. But for example, if your children are growing, they're also curious about the world around them, whether it's,
you know, good or bad for them.
Good or bad for them. But they're still interested in, to some extent, for example, like I know sometimes at home we read the kids different things like historical stuff, you know, American history or whatever, because they like to hear it. And we'll usually, you know, we always try to put a Christian conscious slant to it.
Shorten the, it's the prologue. Get to the question.
So anyways, so that's there, that reality is there. How do we, you know, how can we deal with it? Because it is very big.
The other Bhaktijan supplied the answer to that question yesterday by creating a situation within the home and in the association of devotees where they can experience a higher taste. Then it's real easy. They see something else and they know what it is. This is illusion. I forget who was telling me this. Anyway, someone was telling me they were going somewhere with their children, and the children walked right up to somebody who was smoking a cigarette in an airport and said, "That's Maya." So, you know, if they understand what happiness, real happiness is, and the allurements away from real happiness towards so-called happiness, but they're actually experiencing real happiness, it's easy. You know, the strong yes makes an easy no. But, you know, curiosity, children. Prabhupada comments in these quotes that I was reading. Prabhupada was saying, children are basically good, but through bad association in the course of time, they may take up. He specifically says, cigarettes, you know, who is born being attracted to smoke a cigarette? But if something is acquired, or so many other things. He gives, you know, coffee and tea, and so many other things that are just parts of Western culture, or not just Western culture. But they're annoyances. They're unnecessary. And so through tasting the purified consciousness that comes with genuine devotion, one gets released from those attractions. So it's, time is rolling. We'll take the last question.
One question is very long. It's about this statement. I'll try to make it as short as possible, though.
Okay.
I overheard a conversation at a temple at a table between the brahmachari and an older devotee, a woman. The brahmachari was telling her, "Mataji, can you imagine that? This woman came at the temple right in front of Govinda and Sri Radha, and she stands right in front of me, known as the Brahmachari. Can you imagine the sin in her mind? Saying, 'Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.'" So I said to him, I said, "You know, tomorrow, if I was going to go to a Jain's temple somewhere in India or any other place, if I was to take all my clothes off and go in there naked like they do in that belief, in that philosophy, I'm sure they would never look at me, I would never look at them. I would be there to see the principal, ask them a question about what the statue represents, what philosophy, what teaching." And that, "Yes, sir, you made a covenant with Krishna. The burden of control is more so on you than it is on anyone else. You made the covenant with Krishna, not me, not any other woman who comes to this temple. So whether they come with clothes or with 60 clothes or with no clothes, although it's not practiced, but it should, if your mind is focused on Krishna, you wouldn't even know they're right next to you praying.
And what if somebody's mind is not focused on Krishna?
No, but me, I just finished that sentence. And I said to him, I said, you know, besides, these are traditions, according to Jai Krishnamurti, they have to be respected. They have to be respected. But they're not absolute truth. Only divine truth is absolute truth. These are just, you know, teachings. Besides, also, you know, Shankaracharya teaches that we should not be disturbed by our environment. Our mind should be way above that. He turns around and he tells me, oh, these are karmi teachers. And I'm like, you know, it really outraged me at that point, because, not because of what he said, because I have heard this comment, karmi, from so many devotees, day in and day out, time and time and again. I've heard this, where devotees distinguish themselves with, I'm a non-karmi, they're out there, they're karmi. And who are we? Who are we? We are only ignorant human beings, especially me. I'm probably the most ignorant one here, but we are only ignorant human beings trying to serve Krishna, hoping, only hoping that Krishna's love and mercy will be there in the human society. That's what we are. We have no right to put ourselves above any other human being, be it that they are karmi or be it that they are atheists. Think that they are whatever they are. We have no right to distinguish between a karmi and another.
Oh, you're making two different statements.
Right, I am. But I mean.
Whoa. You said placing yourself, we have no right to place ourselves above another being. And then you, after that, you said we have no right to make distinctions
between who we are and what a karmi is and what a karmi is.
We're obliged to make distinctions. We're not obliged in a prideful or arrogant way to place ourselves in a greater estimation. We are obliged to make distinctions. We are obliged to make distinctions.
Why is that?
Because the platform of our spiritual attainment says that we must. So I'll step back and give a little frame for that. According to the descriptions within the scripture, there are different stages of progress on the spiritual path, beginning, intermediate, and advanced. So in the intermediate stage, I'll skip a lot of the detail, but in the intermediate stage, which we're striving for, we're trying to become a little bit fixed in regard for the Supreme. So in that stage, it's recommended to make the following distinctions, which is a function of intelligence, is to make distinctions. There's God, and we're supposed to worship Him. There are those who are engaged in activity of trying to worship Him, and we're to befriend such persons. There's persons who are innocent, and we're to extend ourselves in whatever way we can, compassionately, to assist their connection with the Supreme. And there's a fourth category, persons who are directly, diametrically opposed to God. They would like to kill God, either literally or philosophically, put Him out of existence. And we're to avoid that association carefully. We're supposed to make distinctions.
But distinction brings the danger of fanaticism.
Well, not making distinctions has another danger. I may repose my tendency to worship upon something that's not worshipable. Or I may choose to befriend all beings, and I may befriend some very, very dangerous kind of personality. I mean, I know people that have, you know, I could go into it. Naively, they made very close friendship with persons who were very destructive.
But you have to also the Krishna devotee that might be dangerous.
Okay. Also. Therefore, but so we need to make distinctions. We need to. One of the statements I didn't let you finish. I mean, I interrupted just at that one point because it just I had to say something. we need to make that. So, if your concern, if the overall concern is the heart of the devotee should be very compassionate. Yes. And if the heart of that of a particular devotee is exhibiting something other than compassion, that's something that needs to be addressed. And if you find that's there to a degree of consistency that disturbs you beyond just one experience, which I think is what you were saying, that's revealing. We should look within our hearts. Everyone in the room and outside the room and everywhere. What's in our heart? Is there kindness and softness and compassion of heart towards other living beings or not?
Because you know when Mother Teresa went and picked up sick and dying people from the street, she could care less if they're karmic or not karmic. Then their father was treating the sick people or people who had all kind of dangerous diseases, AIDS and everything. He could care less if they're karmic or not karmic, if they're sinful or non sinful. We look at that teaching and we look at our teaching, and according to you, we have to make distinction. Then where do you make the distinction between that teaching and this teaching?
There's not something in the Vaishnava teaching. There's not something in Vaishnava teaching that says compassion upon sinful people is forbidden.
But then association even with the karmic people.
Well, then how do you associate? You associate in an appropriate manner. You give acts of kindness to that individual in an appropriate manner. So the advanced stage of Mother Teresa's compassion was superlative. But there's no point of disagreement. And in comparison or in contrast, there are some persons who are performing sadhana bhakti who are less advanced than Mother Teresa in the compassion department. So please be compassionate upon them. And we should, you know, we should make sure at least from ourselves that we're free from that same defect. And try to effectively, by providing a good example and good association, elevate the quality of compassion that we find in others, devotees or those who are not devotees as well. At least we should try for that.
I agree that I'm not sure that's really deeply taught in Krishna's teaching. Jesus Christ said, if you want to know about a religion, look at the fruits of that religion. I'm looking among many devotees, and all I see, like over here, is discussion about who is karmic and who is not karmic.
Well, I don't hear the same.
I'm sorry, it might be a reflection of my own.
Well, it might be the particular persons that you're associating with also. But, you know, I haven't heard any of that condemning harshness here. come back here.
I mean, I was told I could not go into the kitchen here because I don't harm any clothes, where that's, I can't be more specific than that.
Okay. But what does that, there's a rule, the altar where Radha Damodar are, and what's behind there, the Prabhupada said the kitchen, is an extension of the altar. Literally, you go back there and you see what's going on. They're directly on the altar, off, you know, back and forth, taking things to be offered to the deity. And in that particular area, I mean, here's, there's a chain. It's not that...
I agree, but, I mean...
What has to be...
superficial, though. I mean, you're supposed to be all-embracing...
Well, I'm just talking about the kitchen area for the moment. And one should be coming before Krishna in a internally and externally pure condition. So, let me just get the idea across here. So... In approaching the deity specific, this is different, and that's different. We're making a distinction. That area is directly coming before the deity. So not just anybody can approach the deity directly and directly perform puja and worship of the deity. We have to, even if one is not a karmi, but a devotee. If a devotee is not clean, whether Kalini, bless her heart, will not go in anywhere in that area unless she's clean. She's a devotee, but she'll go in those devotional conditions, clean. So, and here it's different. Because this is not an extension, we're not going from here onto the altar, from there onto the altar, whatever is there.
Yeah, but still, clothes are on a superficial level. There are many devotees, I'm sure, who, you know, were wearing for years on end, you know, devotional clothes, and, you know, they now have criminal record. I'm not even going to get into that. But they were allowed in the kitchen, they were allowed to go on the altar, they were allowed to go everywhere. What I'm saying is that, you see, the danger that the reason why I'm so, it hurts me in a deep way is that because I saw it firsthand in my country. In my country, the Muslim teachers, they didn't have to tell directly, go kill all the Hindus, or burn all the Hindu temples, or Christians are unclean, or Jews are no good. All they had to do was hint indirectly, a little bit. And that was enough to get people going and you know, do certain
things. Be abusive in various degrees.
And that can, it doesn't matter if it's Islam or Krishna teaching or any teaching.
So
when you try to make too much distinction and you create discrimination, you know, you're creating a danger actually.
Well, as I said already, it's not, and not making distinction is also dangerous. So, but distinction in and of itself is not dangerous. It's what you do with it, how you process that. It's just like I gave some examples that I don't know didn't seem to hit your button like this one has, but things where the example that I gave, for example, was where somebody is being like this individual who was monopolizing in our discussion. So rather than it wouldn't be so difficult to take a philosophy like a club or bludgeon instrument and just bash the fellow. Mm-hmm. Put him in his place and feel, okay, now I took care of him. Who's next? And having him witness that, persons may go, whoa, we'll be quiet. So I could win the battle and lose the war. So something good can also be used in a bad way. Distinctions in and of themselves are not good or bad. It's how they're used. And so it's the consciousness that's carried. It's And that's one of the things that we've been trying to address here is material conceptions of oneself and impure motivations, taking something good and with contaminations of heart. You gave some very dramatic examples, and one could go on making a lot more examples of abuse of something good. So I would I want to end with this because of our schedule and so forth, but my recommendation to you, my appeal to you would be the anger should go to abuse, not to discrimination per se, making distinctions per se. But once those distinctions are made, the power that that wields and using that power or strength in a wrong way, an abusive way. That's abuse of authority, abuse of power, abuse of discriminating skill is the problem. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki
jai. His Holiness Srila Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.